Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome once again to the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rework Hour, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. I'm your announcer, Reverend James of FolkConjure.com in North Carolina, and in just a moment, we'll be joined by our co-host, Catherine Ironwood of LuckyMojo.com in Forestville, California, and ConjureMan of ConjureManConsulting.com in Mission Viejo, California. This week, we welcome a special guest, Stuart Palm of StuartPalm.com in Hong Kong, bringing us today's topic on the magic of incense. They will take your calls and offer advice to address, ameliorate, and radiate your questions and problems about love, money, career, and spiritual protection using traditional African-American folk magic practices of hoodoo, conjure, root work as divined and prescribed by the greatest spiritual hoodooists of our time. You can learn a lot just by listening, but if you're selected from among those who signed up at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and called into the show, then you'll be on the air and receive a free consultation. We'll be going to the phones in just a moment, but first, let's catch up with our co-hosts, Catherine Ironwood and Conjure Man. Miss Cat?
Hi. Nice to hear from you. First things first, how are things in North Carolina?
Things are going really well, except for today it got really, really cold. We're in like the low and mid 40s for some strange reason, and considering it's been rather warm. But we're taking that time since it's not quite warm and the snakes haven't quite got out yet to, for those that remember, we had a tree out front that we had taken down. We're going through a lot of that to see what wood is really good, and we're setting some aside to make different things like wands and staves. So it's been kind of fun.
How neat. Well, that's from a report from a state where the weather is more extreme during the seasons. Around here, we're in that fluttering state where it rains, it's sunny. It rains, it's sunny. It rains, it's sunny. But the spaces between the rain get longer and longer until the rain stops. And had a wonderful visit from a dear friend of mine going back many, many, many years. Diane came to visit me, and it was just a lovely time to talk with her, although a sad time because her dear life partner and my friend Miles has passed away. It was our first time talking since that had happened. We had a long, long talk. It was really interesting talking about, you know, what it means to have your whole life spent with somebody and then to carry on after they're gone. And I realized that in my readings, when I work for people as a reader, a lot of people come to me who are older and are not my age necessarily, but they've reached middle-aged. I have fewer and fewer young teens approaching me for readings. I guess I'm just not that cute young teen reader, witch girl that they thought they were going to connect with. But it's interesting how every reader has a group of clients who kind of stay with them for years and years, and the more experiences that you have in life, the more experiences you can talk with your clients, because reading isn't just plucking answers out of the sky or another dimension. It's not like a comic book. To read for people also is to remember who they are and remember where they've been and when you first started reading for them, and give them some encouragement along the way because you know their story. And I'm just speaking as an older reader. I guess, you know, it's very helpful to stay in touch with your clients. That means not doing the snarky reading thing where you go on social media and talk about how bad your clients are, how much you hate them, and oh, how they annoy you because they always ask the same question. But to actually get to know your clients and feel your heart, you know, with beating with their heart. Anyway, I had a lovely reading with Diane. I have lots of other lovely readings this week too, but that one really stuck out because I've known her since the 1980s. And so that was a really nice. And I did the what I call the full service reader. I gave her a whole started pot of little naked lady plants, resurrection lilies, which I'd started from their little bulblet seeds, and I had a whole pot of them to give to her to put in her garden. And that's what a real reader will do. They'll give you gardening plants, too, if you want them. Anyway, so that's how things have been around here. Been working on updating the web page, just updating the Lucky Mojo forum. And I want to give a big shout-out to James, who has been adding in to the forum the Buy It Now buttons for the most recent 10 video workshops that we did at the Hoodoo Heritage Festival. And this includes some by me, some by Miss Mikkel, and just a bunch, 10 more wonderful workshops. And that was a real nice thing. I will be seeding them throughout the forum because as each workshop is on a certain topic, whether it's astrology or sneaky tricks or whatever it may be, it'll relate to some of the threads at the Lucky Mojo forum. So you'll find these notifications or ads, dollars each. Some of them come with an accompanying book, which you can buy for an extra $12, but you can just take the workshops for $25, and many of the workshops don't have books. They have with them instead a PDF, which is a two-page PDF explaining the workshop, giving recipes and things like that. So I think those of you who are familiar with us and our work and the show know we've got 30 of them online. Now we have 40 of them online, and that'll be a good way to learn so that you don't have to bug your reader off. No, just kidding. That was a bad joke. But, you know, it's true. The better prepared a client is to do spell work or understand spell work, the more they can do for themselves and the less likely they are to be scammed by a scam root worker. If you take one of these classes, for instance, on, you know, how to do astrology by the moon, you'll be much less likely to be scammed by a scam astrologer who starts, you know, telling you all things that don't make any sense. So educate yourself in spiritual work, even if you see yourself primarily as a client. So that's the news from here. And I guess I now ask Conjurman, how are things in your part of the world?
Things are quite well, busy as usual. I do have an interesting update. So if people have been following along, they remember back in February, late January, early February, I was talking about how I was doing a lot of love work. And then towards the end of February, once Valentine's Day ended and March began, I've shifted over to a lot of work and employment and job stuff. But I had done work for a client to draw in new love, and they ended up going on a Valentine's date, is with the report that I gave, and it was a very lovely Valentine's Day date. I just got an update email on Saturday that let me know that the Valentine's date has now turned into several dates, and they've started going steady after about almost a month. So that was very happy news. I was very excited for that because this client had not had a proper date and relationship in several years. So it was a good little breakthrough there. So I'm in a good mood. We're seeing some positive results.
That's great. That's really good news. I love that when it happens.
Yeah, I love when I hear back from clients because, as you know, Miss Kat, sometimes they just disappear. You never hear back ever again. So we assume all is well in the garden.
Yeah, that's really good news. So I have that happen often enough that it keeps me going, you know, to know that someone says, you know, you told me that I would get a new job in spring and I got it last spring, but I forgot to call you. But you know, but thank you for telling me that 2 years ago, you know. And they call back and eventually, you know, you reconnect with them and you find out what's been happening in their lives. All right, well, we have today one of my favorite guests, always willing to talk to us from around the world, and that is Stuart Palm from Hong Kong.
Welcome,
and, welcome to the show, Stuart. It's lovely
Thank
to
you.
Have you
Good
here.
To be here.
For those who don't know Stuart, I'll give a one-sentence recap. He's a really great fortune teller. He is a palmist. He's an artist. He's published his own oracle decks. He is a student of Asian magic, especially the magic of Hong Kong. And he's just an all-around totally great guy, great husband, and great father. So welcome
Aww.
To the show, Stuart.
Thank you. Good to be here. I'll give you the weather report first. It's gotten cold again. It keeps getting warm and then cold again. So we did the same thing that you did in North Carolina. We're having a cold spell, but it never gets so cold. But it's a weird world here still. We're still sort of recovering from COVID, and people are getting COVID again. But you know, it's not as life threatening and fear creating as it, you know, has mutated into whatever it is now. But Hong Kong is a city recovering from trauma still, which is an interesting place to be.
Yeah, I know what you mean, and plus which there's been the various protests in Hong Kong,
mm-hmm.
you know, against the Chinese Communist Party government. I've learned a few things about Hong Kong recently. I don't want to go off on too far on a limb, but I'm going to bring this to the attention of those who listen to this show. There is a YouTuber in London. His name is Dr. K. He does have a degree in musicology, I guess. And but he's it's not an honorary doctorship. He actually has a PhD. His name is Brendan Kavanaugh with a K, Dr. K. And he has was trained classically, but he plays a lot of boogie-woogie music, and he plays the boogie-woogie piano in St. Pancras Station in London. And on the piano that was donated to the station as a public piano by Elton John. And he's got a couple of million followers on YouTube. And through a bizarre accident, and I've mentioned this on the show before, he was basically assaulted by members of the Chinese Communist Party who were under deep cover in England and wanted to use the piano to film a fake live show for the Lunar New Year. But he was filming, and they realized suddenly that if his thing was, he was live streaming, and they thought that would blow their promotion of themselves as being live on the Lunar New Year show. And so a tussle ensued with screaming and various weirdness and security guards, and it turned into a whole thing. Shortly thereafter, Brendan Kavanaugh, who really had no idea what was going on, he was like, but I don't get it, right? He got educated really quick, and then he said that he wanted the piano to be a place for free expression. And then some people showed up from Hong Kong, and they played the song Glory to Hong Kong. You know what I'm talking about, Stuart, right? Which is banned in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
And they played it and sang it, and everyone was moved to tears. Brendan, who is classically trained and can sight read, got the sheet music for it, and he began to play Glory to Hong Kong regularly. After a while, he memorized it, and so now there's this random, weird guy in London who plays Glory to Hong Kong and then morphs it into a boogie-woogie song. Because that's what he plays, this boogie woogie, and he's also taken to fielding protests from Chinese Communist Party opponents who come up and try to disrupt his program. Gone from being just a random guy to being a complete supporter of Hong Kong. Well, while he was supporting Hong Kong, all these people from Taiwan said, "We're from Taiwan, support us too." So now he's a supporter of Taiwan. It's just so strange how the internet and just random things bring people together. And so I just thought I'd mention that the fact that you're from Hong Kong, that you're not from Hong Kong, but that you live in Hong Kong and have been lived there for many, many years. I always think of you when I see these events and think, I know it's a difficult situation to be in because of the domination.
There's always we're still okay. Maybe we'll leave soon. Maybe it won't. Maybe it'll change. Maybe we never know. You just keep going.
Well, speaking as a child, one thing I can say. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
We do have still a very good public health system based originally on the British public health system, and I have a brain issue that's hereditary that my daughter has. So that's one of the reasons I stay here for now. It's worth it.
I see. Now, well, you know, there are pluses and minuses. What I was going to say is, speaking as the daughter of a German Holocaust survivor, Jewish Holocaust survivor, my mother's advice was get out before it's too late.
Well, I'll tell you this. I also belong to a group that does cabaret. And we were just having a show at the Carlisle & Co., which is a, you know, international club place. And there was a lot of talk afterwards about the Weimar Republic, kind of like, oh, there's actually a similarity in the feeling here. So incense.
Yeah. Yeah. But on to incense, right? Well, one reason I think it's really great that you brought up incense is that among the clients whom I've worked with for, you know, the past 50, going on 60 years, I found that incense was how can I phrase this cleanly? Just as oil is to African-American hoodoo, so is incense to Asian folk magic. The use of incense is so built in, so habituated. It entered into hoodoo and into the African-American and the white communities in America during the 1920s, during a fit of Orientalism and importation of goods from China. Chinese cloisonne, trinket boxes came in, Chinese incense, all sorts of, you know, bamboo and rice paper parasols, starting in the 1890s. Mm-hmm. And by the 1920s, this had become this whole fad for everything Asian, and it included incense. But when World War II came in, both the supply lines were shut off, and then, of course, the Japanese were enemies, but we couldn't get anything from China. And so incense died down in American public consciousness, but it did not die down in African American conjure. It remained. And one of the reasons is that conjure is deeply, I was going to say conservative, but I don't mean it in the political sense. It's deeply conservationist of tools and methods and techniques. And something once used will remain in conjure going back to Africa. So there's all these African types of working, and there are Native American and 19th century and then early 20th century techniques and tools which remain, just like the use of the French sachet powders are now embedded in hoodoo, so is Asian incense. So although many people from the white neo-pagan communities are not familiar with incense, most black root doctors are. And that's one of those little oddities that just makes life so delightfully spicy and interesting. So take us into incense as you know it, Stuart.
Well, actually, for me, it starts with a Christian tradition and Christmas time burning frankincense and you know, in church. It's a church thing. That's where I was introduced to the use of incense for I would say that is incense for magic also. That is, you know, people would normally think of that as just like festive smells, but there's a practice going on there, and I was always intrigued by it. And then when I was in my teens, I had a hippie aunt who introduced me to a lot of things like tarot and astral projection, and you know, then that's my introduction to incense just for making the room smell good. But I like to get to know things, so then I would go, well, where does this come from? And that's where I started to learn magic practices with candles and incense and different things. And I use it personally in relation to my own altar in kind of a Taoist way. But I was doing it sort of like that already before I realized that it was sort of a Taoist way of working, and it kind of helped me focus on how that worked in terms of that you're using the incense to empower your altar space and also to communicate with it in a sense, like bringing the energy back and putting the energy in to the altar for whatever it is you're working on. And that originally is a Taoist magic practice of
this
using
is,
the sticks.
I'm going to jump in because I got a serious question for you. When you mentioned frankincense
sure.
and so forth in the church, were you raised Catholic or Orthodox?
No, my family was, I don't know. My father was raised Catholic, but when I was a kid, my grandparents on my mother's side were Methodist. So I was raised Methodist because mostly we went to church to make my grandparents happy. But a lot of the stuff my father would do would be based in Catholic tradition.
Yeah, because so I know a lot of people in the Protestant traditions who abjure incense as being, you know, too Catholic. I want to jump in on something here, which is really important, and that's the form of incense. You mentioned your hippie aunt. Now, an aunt who is a hippie would probably have been familiar with Indian or Tibetan incense, which would be agarbatti or stick incense on a bamboo strip, right? You know, things like Nag Champa or Super Hit or any of the,
Nag Champa.
Exactly. And so this is something that regional incense is so important. So resin incense, the frankincense and myrrh, is from the Middle East. It's used in all forms of Middle Eastern religious worship and then enters into Christianity and spreads up with the Orthodox and then with the Western Roman Catholicism and then becomes part of Christianity. The agarbatti stick incense, sometimes called joss sticks, are really from South Asia, the Indian subcontinent. In China, it's more likely, and also in Japan, to make the incense powder without a core. It's just itself. It's powdered and formed into little sticks. And so, this, they say, because they don't want to have the smell of burning bamboo. They want it to be 100% incense. And the Chinese make these coil incenses, which I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. These are incenses that will burn for hours and hours and hours. And they
the temples
hang from
have
the
rooms
ceil-
full of them.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And they burn from the bottom upward slowly. The Japanese will make small sticks, and they keep them in little cases the same way that they do their fine pen and ink supplies and things. It's a presentation thing. There's a in African American work, it mostly comes through what came from the Vantine Company and a few other Asian companies that made loose powder incense. And Vantine was a company that was in America that imported incense from Asia, and in order to scent it, they used a really sort of cheap wood flour, sometimes bamboo powder or wood powder or sawdust, and scented it with essential oils. And this became sort of the standard of this loose powder incense, became the standard that was introduced into mainstream America and into black magical practice. But the reason that it remains in hoodoo that we use loose powder incense is because it's the only incense to which you can add your own herbs and make your own custom mix. So, for instance, you get some money incense, and it may be scented with some essential oil, and it may be dyed green, but then you're going to take the different money herbs that you like, whether it's bayberry or cinnamon or thyme or whatever you're into, or a combination thereof, and you're going to powder them or shred them pretty fine, and then put them into the loose powder incense and burn it in a brazier. So when we talk of incense, we're talking about different people's styles. So when you, Stuart, are talking about incense, you first mentioned resin incense, then you mentioned what I presume to be, you know, like Nag Champa, a hippie importation.
Yep.
And now we're talking about Taoist-style incense. So tell us about what distinguishes Taoist-style incense.
So the incense that we have in Hong Kong, and this is not always Taoist. There's a mixture of Buddhist and Taoist and Confucianist practices that all kind of get mixed together. And in the temple, you're relating to local and Chinese gods, but that's a mixture as well. And there are people that can become famous for being great readers, and then they become deified. And then, so there's even a temple called Wang Tai Sin Temple, and Wang Tai Sin was a guy who was a really good reader who is deified as a god. It is a big mixture of all kinds of things that happen. And the practice, the incense that they have in the temples is always the coil ones, but the coil ones are handled by the people who run the temple, whereas practitioners who come to the temple to worship or to practice or ask questions and throw the moon blocks or the fortune-telling sticks, because that's all part of the temple practice, you will always light three sticks of incense, and they are bamboo stick incense, and I think they're generally a sandalwood based type. Usually, it's a sacred wood incense, and you bow three times with your three burning sticks to the altar you're at, and you put the incense into a bowl of sand usually. And at home, often people use rice in their bowl to stand up their incense. But when you're working with your own altar, there's even specific ways you hold the incense. So if you hold the three sticks in your left hand, you are focusing on the relationship between yourself and the altar. So and the gods or energies or whatever it is you're working with. And then if you hold it in your right hand, you're taking your own energy and imbuing it into the altar. So you're feeding it in a way. And so the incense is there to give the energy of yourself and, you know, what you're calling upon to the relationship to sort of charge the magic you're creating. And that always made sense to me. So as soon as I learned that, I was like, okay, that is useful. That is functional. And I found it to be very useful. And there is then a regular practice of burning daily incense as a way to keep your energies, your magic going and charged. Similar to using candles, there's a similar thing going on between those two.
So this is really an important piece of information. I want to make sure that we understand that. So when someone has the three sticks of incense, and then you're holding it in your hand before you put it into the holder, right?
Mm-hmm.
And do you switch it from one hand to another, or do you either choose it will be the left hand to call upon it? You choose. You do not switch in the middle. Okay, good.
Right.
So,
and that's for people who are really magic working in that practice.
Mm-hmm.
For regular public making a basically a prayer, then they generally wouldn't think about that. You're just doing you're bowing three times to your altar. And usually you're honoring ancestors in that situation. That's mostly people use it as an ancestor worship, which is why stick incense has a connotation towards death, when it's not really what it's doing, but in that context, people think of it that way because they're honoring their ancestors when they use the incense.
So that's really interesting to understand. In a lot of folk magic, there's a lot of emphasis on individual power. And in some cultures, there's an emphasis on ancestral guardianship or veneration of the ancestors as a prelude to making a petition prayer. And in some folk magics, they verge more on being religious, where they are simply you call upon an angel, archangel, god, deity, saint, whatever, for help. So I want to focus in on this Asian tradition of these three incense sticks. Where do you get them from? If you have them at home, okay, but if you go to a temple, I've been in Japan and you purchase them at the temple as you enter. Is that the same in Hong Kong?
Yep, you can purchase them at the temple, and there's different grades and thicknesses that you can purchase, and you're not purchasing them. They are provided with a strong nudge to give a donation to the box that's next to them.
Right, yes,
so,
exactly.
So there's
like
a pile of
like
the
Catholic
incense packet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's like Catholic Church
candles. You,
you
drop
you
the
can
money
get
out
them
there.
For,
exactly.
Yeah, you can get them for free, but you're encouraged to pay. Yeah. So you leave a donation, you get, now you said packages. Does each package contain three sticks?
No, it's got more than three sticks. So there's like, I don't know, 12 sticks, 20 sticks. I'm not sure. I have a package around here somewhere. I could count them, but I never paid attention to how many sticks are in the packet.
A dozen or so. So here you are at the temple. Are you, would you use all of them in groups of three, or would you take some home with you to use at home? What is the cultural norm?
From my experience, you just use the three for what you're doing. And you go to you're going to the god for what you're trying to achieve. And you're going to the temple for the god for what you're trying to achieve. So if you're, for example, writing a book, you would go to the god who is the god of writing, and you'd light your three sticks there, and you'd bow to him three times and make your prayer for whatever it is, and you put your incense in the bowl, and that's that. There's a god for everything. There's, you know, different gods relate to different energies.
And
most of
them
have to do with prosperity, but.
Yes, I know. That's a very typical Chinese thing, especially in the southern areas of China, and Hong Kong kind of falls in that area. The southeastern portion of China, much of the prayers are for prosperity, again, which has a connection to hoodoo. Because in hoodoo, in an African tradition, many prayers are for luck. And so that could be luck in gambling. And both the Chinese and the African-American cultures do not find gambling or luck to be sinful.
No.
And so that's why there's kind of an overlap in attitude. And I think that's contributed to the fact that so many African-American practitioners on the West Coast use Asian spiritual supplies and surround themselves with lucky Buddhas and Year of the Dragon and all of that stuff. That would appear in black culture in California, for instance, where it would not in Ohio, probably.
Mm-hmm. Right. Particularly in places like Oakland.
Oakland, yes, Oakland. Absolutely. Also L.A., but I would say that if you were going to do like a kind of a Venn diagram of the most overlap between Cantonese, Hong Kong, you know, Singapore, Macau type China, Chinese practices and black practices from Africa through Mississippi, you know what I mean? Oakland. It would be Oakland, yeah.
Yeah.
I've always found that amusing because I grew up with it, and when I struck out and lit out to other places to find that that wasn't happening. However, Chicago was another place. There was a place called the Eastern Incense Company in the 1930s, and it was run by some Asian people, but I don't know what culture they came from. But they made briquette incense, which would be sort of Japanese style, but they may have just been importing it. And they also made powder incense. But the briquettes, they came with little lucky number books and things like that, what your dream, what numbers you should bet. And they sold them through Morton Newman's King Novelty Company, which was also known as Famous Products Distribution and Valmore Beauty Supply in Chicago. And so that got distributed because Valmore Beauty Supply specialized in Black Cosmetics and Hair Care Products. Those got distributed all the way into Tennessee, Kentucky, you name it. I mean, it went everywhere, mm-hmm. North Carolina. If you were Black, you got the Valmore catalog, and it contained these incenses, which were made by this Asian company that were importing them or making them in Chicago. And so there was a connection there, too.
Yeah.
Well, I like to see that it comes round and round. And even if you go to shops here, you will also find Palo Santo and sage for sale, mm-hmm. with the shells to burn it in. And, you know, everybody uses everybody else's practices,
yeah.
and emulations.
Yeah,
and at the temples, most temples have a section where there's a reader, so you can have a reading done. And often when you go in there, it's tarot cards.
Oh, really?
You know,
the cross cultural element here is very, very real, because cultures aren't siloed off. And while nation states may have borders, cultures don't. And so they interact with one another, and they grow, and supply shops end up in places, and they start selling things. And incense is one of those fantastic ways of tracing the unique influences on hoodoo, because if you look on the West Coast in places like Chicago, you can see a very clear Eastern influence on the use of incense there, from temple incense to Tibetan ghost incense. All of this type of incense will be found. But if you were to go a little bit to the Southeast, where you're looking at Georgia, you're looking at Virginia, you're looking at South Carolina, North Carolina, you'll still find incense, but you're going to find a much closer connection to sort of Catholic uses of incense and Jewish uses of incense, which are quite common, until you see certain, like, frankincense, myrrh, holy mm-hmm. incense is a very common, loose incense is something that you'll see more of, and less of stick incense.
And you'll see Three Kings brand.
And Three Kings brand,
mm-hmm.
yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are the other place you would purchase it here is there are Buddhist supply shops when you go to those, and also near temples there are shops that have the joss paper and incense and the effigies that are paper made for burning to your ancestors, which is a whole other thing, but very interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Now, the effigies have not made it as greatly into California. The joss paper has. You can go into a grocery store and buy joss paper. When I was a child in the 1950s, if Chinese people owned the grocery store, there'd be a whole section of joss paper. And also incense, including those special incenses. And I don't know the name for them. They're very thick. They look like a cattail, you know, the plant, a cattail. They're very thick, and they often would have stamped into them Chinese characters, stamped and gilded. And they were always sold in groups of three. You got three of them. And,
exactly.
But they weren't always
You can get those
available.
At the temples.
It's
just like, you know, if you need, if you're really serious that you really need this energy thicker, it is really just kind of like the turning up the volume on your incense.
Yeah, I always liked them because they looked like cattail plants, and it was sort of weighty. They're very cool. So now when using incense, I do have to put up one caveat. Back in the 1990s, there was an article on Chinese coil incense that said that people, this was not in China now, this was people who have Chinese origin, presumably born in China or first generation in America, were having much higher rates of lung cancer than other people, comparable income, health status, or whatever. And they were questioning, was this caused by tobacco? And the answer was no. It was apparently caused by breathing in the smoke of coil incense all the time, day after day after day. And there were cases given, this were from oncologists investigating. So why did this 54-year-old man have lung cancer and he never smoked cigarettes, right? What was going on? But it turned out he burned coil incense 24 hours a day in his house. So
right.
I I republished some of that information at the Lucky Mojo Forum and in, among my course students who study hoodoo with me, and said, be careful that you're not breathing this all the time, because incense smoke is smoke, and smoke will damage your lungs. So I'm not saying don't ever burn incense, but it was interesting that after that article came out, then there was this whole fad for what would be called essential oil dipping sticks incense, where you have pieces mm-hmm. of bamboo, you dip them into the essential oil, and you turn them upside down, and they make like a little bouquet, and they scent the room. Now, the funny thing is that's not the first time that happened. The first so-called liquid incense that I know of was put out by one of these companies in Chicago, but marketed by Morton Newman's Valmore. And it was called liquid incense, all run together as one word, trademark name. And but there were various forms of it. You got a little tiny squeezer top dram bottle, tiny little bottle, and then you got a little glass rod, like from a laboratory. I have to explain here. Morton Newman was a chemist, so he's like, oh yeah, I need a little glass rod here. And then you
I had the ones where you had a ceramic disc, mm-hmm. and you put it on top of a light bulb.
Yes.
And then you dropped the drips in that, and I had that. And the funny thing about the oil incense is that stuff gave me a headache. So I didn't use it for very long because it gave me a headache for some reason. So I went back to the stick incense.
So I was to continue on with Morton Newman.
Yeah.
After the liquid incense, which was sort of a general purpose, you know, a slight vanilla scent is what all that was when I bought some, of course, and many, many years later on eBay. And when you open up an old perfume or an old incense, the vanilla hits you, but the rest of the stuff is probably vaporized. So I couldn't tell what all was in it, but it did have vanilla. But he also made Clio May liquid incense. And Clio May liquid incense, which is supposed to be a room freshener, and it was to be dropped on a light bulb. And in fact, there were instructions with both of these that came that said, put it on a light bulb. And Clio May became popular among prostitutes to freshen a room in a brothel where they would have, you know, been with one man, and then we're going to quickly freshen the room and go with another guy. And they used Clio May. I guess they liked it the best of the two scents that were being offered. And so Clio May incense became reputed for being of help for sex workers. And then eventually Clio May became an oil and Clio May became a sachet and so forth and so on. But the person who made it a sachet and an oil was me, because it originally was only a liquid incense, and I loved the smell of it, and I recreated it, and I then made a whole line of Clio May products based on the original Morton Newman recipe, which I don't know where he got, but it's really he was a good perfumer, and it's a great recipe. So that was sort of an interesting thing, that the idea of liquid incense did exist and then vaporized, so to speak, and then came back again in the 90s when the idea that smoke incense would be harmful to your health. But now that liquid incense has again sort of faded into the background. It's not the Martha Stewart, everyone must have it in their living room thing that it used to be, right? We have
right.
these fads. I suspect that the reason it gave you a headache was that there was a solvent in it.
Probably.
That's just me.
I found that you just have to find the higher end incense generally, because the lower end stuff, even in stick form, it's going to have more chemicals, or you don't know where, you know, the more mass produced it is, the more I'm like, it's probably not great for you. Whereas the higher end stuff made by, there's Buddhist ones that are done through nunneries and things like that. Usually they're better for you, as far as I understand, although I really don't know the full ins and outs. What I do know is that it keeps the air conditioning cleaning services very active in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. The idea of using incense for a specific purpose has its own cultural resonances. For instance, it's very obvious, I guess you could say, to use incense for veneration. You can go back to the Mayans with their itz, which is I-T-Z, and itz is copal negro or black copal, which is a New World relative of myrrh, and it's sort of an analog species of myrrh. It contains all of the opiates and everything else that myrrh contains, and it was used to be, it was called the food of the gods, and it was that the gods, and among the Maya, and I'm not talking just the ancient Maya, I'm talking about the modern contemporary Maya of the 20th century when I first encountered it, they said that you do not necessarily have to offer food to the deities. They just want it. They just want the smoke of incense. And so the idea of smoke going upward and fragrant wood like Palo Santo, which means holy wood, there's so many of these things, you know, sage and so forth, that are used this way, cedar and other, you know, kinnikinick that were used by Native Americans. The idea that this is food of the gods or of favor to the gods, when the gods are conceived of as heavenly deities or floating non-corporeal entities. However, this way of looking at magic and religion is only one way, right? There are also traditions of pouring water, libations, and so forth, which go downward. And so there's different, again, every culture has its own little way. But I would say that the idea of incense as being material that becomes ethereal is so obvious from the form of incense, right? And that's one reason that people use it the way that they do.
Yeah. Historically, I it seems to cross all cultures, and even ancient Egypt had a form of incense used in temple worship.
That's right. Kifi incense, the famous Egyptian, ancient Egyptian incense. In the chat room, Reverend James says, juniper is used in Tibetan sang incense rituals. And that is interesting to me because all of the coniferous plants are aromatic. That's just part of what they do, being coniferous, why they are coniferous and why they don't drop their leaves, because they make a protective shield of these gums and resins, which allows them to keep their leaves over the winter. It's just an evolutionary track that they went down, and the result is aromatic. And so Eastern red cedar, juniper, Middle Eastern cedar, which is a different species, all of those, and Western red cedar too, all of those are aromatic and will produce an incense that is fragrant. Balsam fir is another. There's so many of them that are used that way. They tend to be hunted to extinction if they become too popular. And there are a number of incense trees, like aloes wood, for instance, and even myrrh and frankincense are now endangered species because people will hunt them to extinction to get the incense.
Yeah, aloes wood it's also why it's so expensive, right? The scent that you get from it, because it's also used in perfumes and things like oud and whatnot. But there is this universal cultivation of incense that we find almost across the globe. And all of it has a devotional component, the idea that incense in many ways replaces sacrifice. And we see this particularly after the destruction of the Jewish temple, for example. The idea is that incense and prayer are the more common forms of sacrifice rather than burnt offerings. But it goes into this older idea. You burn offerings, and the offering smoke, the burning and consumption, goes towards the deity, and that's found in sort of every culture, which is why I have found that in hoodoo, the use of incense in any sort of distance magic, not just devotional magic, but distance magic, works incredibly well. If you're working on someone and you don't have access to lay down powders, and you don't have access to lay down dirt, because contact magic is a core component and strategy within hoodoo. I have found that when you're doing your candle work, you can add incense to it, and it does amplify that power. It does increase the ability of your prayers to be heard, to influence over long distances, but also to have your prayers taken up to God, the Creator, Divinity, etc.
That's a really important thing to say, and you're such a great thinker for bringing that out. So I'm going to reiterate that a little bit. When you listen to us on the radio show and we talk about light a candle, do this and the other, you'll mm-hmm. often hear conjurmen say, and light some incense. And yep. it's not that conjurmen is like an incense freak. He's actually giving a piece of wisdom here. And the wisdom is that incense, by its very nature, which is airy, will float to the distant person. And that is in addition to veneration. The most distant beings, being angels or gods or spirits or saints or deities or the universal divine, that is one thing. But what about your boyfriend who's in Italy for the summer? incense is a way to reach him. And that's very important.
One of the first ways I was using it in that sense was to connect with the air element through the incense. So you have your, in the altar space, you have your water, you have your fire with the candle, and you have your, where's the air? Well, it's shown through the incense floating up into the air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is a topic that about which a lot can be said, and I want to stress here that people should experiment with incense as an adjunct to their altar work, whether it's for veneration or to influence another. There's another thing which Conjurman has mentioned a number of times, and I'll let him talk about it, and that is burning papers to ashes yes. on incense. Could you just talk about that a moment?
Yeah, this is a way of having your prayers heard. And so you pray, you write your petition paper, or you write your name paper, you fold it up, and you burn the incense on top of it. So you have an incense holder or a thurible or censer. You place the sort of incense down on it, and then you put the loose leaf incense on as a cone on top of it, and you burn it down, letting it burn the edges of the paper. Sometimes it burns all the way, and sometimes it doesn't. You have to sort of take it out and light the paper on fire and then mix it into the ash. And what this does is, it does is incorporate the prayer into the incense. You can then take the ashes and dispose of them in a traditional way, like going to the crossroads and blowing the ashes to the four corners of the crossroads, thus carrying your prayer throughout the world. It's a really effective way of working in which your prayer gets incorporated into the incense by burning the paper or the petition alongside the incense.
Yeah, and there's another thing you can do, and this is if you want to, what I was called triple refining your petition. So you take those ashes of the incense mixed with your petition, and you write your petition again, and you put those ashes in it, and you burn it again on incense, and then you take those ashes and make another packet with your paper, with your prayer, and you do it three times. And so at the end, you end up with your petition has been burned three times on incense. Mm-hmm. And then you have those ashes and you scatter them to the four corners of the world. It's a very effective way to work. And the triple refining of it is especially useful if you don't have the name of a person or if you have their name but no personal concerns. You have no hair, no photo, no nothing. You're just going to write their name and then burn it and then do it again and then do it again. And now you have something that can be used, if you want to use it, as a personal concern. Rather than scattering those ashes, you could take those ashes and use it to load a candle, for instance, as if it were a personal concern, or work with them in some other way, like putting them in a doll or something. So
yeah.
incense becomes a way to concentrate your energy as well as to disperse it.
Exactly. I mean, one of the things that I do is once I've burnt down the incense and then burnt the petition paper with the incense and mix the ashes, rather than blow it to the four corners of the wind, I will mix those ashes with sachet powders and dirt so that I fix the dirt with even more prayer, so that the tricked dirt that you have has both sachet powders and incense burned into it and your petition paper burned into it, and then you can go and lay that out as a sneaky trick to affect that person. They'll quite literally be walking through your prayers, your petition paper.
Wow. Yeah, that's to lay a trick. Exactly. That's a powerful way to lay a trick. These are building blocks of methodology of folk magic, and that are really essential, you know, for anyone who wants to be a practitioner to understand where incense comes. You don't just light incense to set the mood or perfume the room. There's a whole lot more going on with incense than that.
For sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been really, really wonderful, educational. I'm going to ask you, Stuart, before we wrap up for the topic, what are your favorite incenses? Do you know, can you tell them by name? Where can people buy them? Do you know what herbs they're made with or what?
I don't know all the details for sure. I do like sandalwood, but it was actually mentioned in the chat. It is also endangered, so I don't want to be going down a route where I'm making something become extinct. I'm a big fan of patchouli, and that comes from the, you know, it's one of the early ones that I used. And I love that patchouli, a lot of people don't know, realize that it's actually a plant. And you can just, if you find a patchouli plant, it right off the vine, you get exactly that smell, which has always been good. And it also is a, it is a prosperity connected thing. So for those kinds of spells, it's functional. I do still use Nag Champa just because it was one that I had a long time ago, and I like it. I honestly don't know exactly what it is, but I've always enjoyed it. And then the ones that are used in the temples here, I have to look up what the mixture is, but it's pretty standard in terms of the smell and consistency. I don't use the temple ones at home, though. I get different ones for my own work because I want to make sure that they're of a higher quality for my own regular space for what we mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Contraman? What's your favorite incenses? Uh-oh.
I'll just say I also am a regular sage user for clearing spaces. And
I don't really use sage that often for clearing spaces, but I'm a huge fan of burning pine for clearing spaces. I gravitate to the smell of pine.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I love pine as well.
Yeah, I like pine more than sage. Sage, I have an allergic reaction to it. I think my favorite is Super Hit. And it's a more Tibetan scented but made in India incense.
Super Hit, okay.
Super Hit, love it. Okay. All right, well, now we're going to turn this over to our client section.
Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com. And by the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org. And by Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted root worker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches, located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Tonight, our caller is calling in from California, area code 650. Alina, are you there?
Hi, can you hear me?
Hi, yes. also known as Hey Maganda in our chat. Have you had any readings on this situation before?
No, but I have had a reading with Miss Kat before.
Okay. And she writes, I just discovered via DNA testing my biological father. I'm interested in getting a reading about reaching out to him and his reception of my contact. Turning it over to you, Miss Kat.
Wow. That's really interesting. And so this is, I'm going to ask a few questions. First of all, what sign of the zodiac are you?
I'm a Capricorn.
I knew it. I remember you, actually. Okay. And so you're a Capricorn, and this biological father, you were not raised by, you didn't know who it was, you found out through DNA testing. Did you have another man in your life who you thought were your biological father?
Yes. I learned at 18 that the man who raised me wasn't my biological father, and that's like that's a big to do. But the one who raised me, I could not have had a better father. He's great dad. So.
And the first thing I would ask before we do a reading, how does he feel about your contacting your biological father? Is he okay with it?
So he knew that I was having my DNA done, and he's never expressed, because I had another DNA test before that did not come back with a name. And then I had another one done recently. I got a gift for Christmas, and that one came back with a name. So he knew that I was pursuing looking, but he does not know if I could actually find someone. And that's actually another part of the reading, I suppose, would be like, what would be the reception with him? Because his wife, my mother, has passed away recently. So yeah, I mean,
The reason I asked this before doing the reading is, I have a great deal of sensitivity on this subject because a person who raised you doesn't want to be discarded, you know. So I would, before reading about how this other guy will receive you, I would make sure that you really reach out to the man who raised you and let him know how important he is and how this will not change things between you. I say that from a social point of view and a spiritual point of view too. The reward for raising a child should be love and a reciprocal affection, and it can be very devastating for the person who raised you to find out that you're not content and you're seeking something else. On the other hand, just saying, let's go forward and see what we see. Okay. So say that again.
To touch base on that, so my dad, the one who raised me, I'm actually his caregiver, and so he and I were actually really, really close.
Oh,
and
good.
So actually, I would be curious to see what you had to say about my dad's reception to me reaching out to this other person.
Okay, well, I don't know if we have time to do both questions, but I'm going to first talk about the other person. So the first card I have is the Two of Wands. I'm going to do the first reading. Stuart will do the second reading, and Conjurman will give us some spell work, hopefully with incense. The Two of Wands shows a person who's standing on a parapet of a little castle looking out over a bay of water. And he holds one wand, and there's another wand in a bracket, and he holds a globe in his other hand, in his right hand, a globe of the earth. And this is about seeking and knowing that you will find. This is the person who says, you know, like Christopher Columbus, if I go over here, I will find a new world, and he did. There's also a emblem on the left of on the carving onto the stones of the parapet there that are two lilies crossed with two roses. Now, lilies represent the innocent, the children, and roses represent love, sexual passion, and so forth. So there is a connection here between the sexual passion that gave rise to this love, you are going to seek and you are going to try to find. And this card says it's a good thing to do it. The problem with the card is he has no ship to convey him. And so this is a card of a pause to think about your plan. Your plan is good, and you will go forward with it, and you will find this person. The next card is called the Hermit. This says that your biological father may not be as responsive as you would like. The Hermit is a man who's on top of an icy mountain holding a lantern and looking down and saying, you may approach me. But he doesn't, you know, run around into the marketplace, you know, waving a banner saying, I'm here, I'm here. Okay? So you have to approach him respectfully. He also holds a wand or staff, although he's not one of the wand cards. And he's dressed in gray against a gray sky. He will probably be a little neutral and guarded, but it's also possible that he expected this, or it won't come as a complete surprise to him. That lantern there says he must have known something, or someone in his family did. So when you found him, was it through him having given DNA, or was it through siblings or half-siblings?
It was through him having given DNA.
Yeah. So he laid it out there. He said, I'm here. Here I am. Come find me. So that's very important statement on his part, but he didn't know where to find you. So he just puts his lantern up, you know, we'll leave the light on for you, and you come forward, right? And the third card is a card that is actually very interesting. Let's just put it this way. It's called the Ten of Pentacles, and it's a card of family inherited wealth. I don't know that that means he's going to leave you money, but it does say he will put you in touch with your inheritance, whatever that means. And so this is a card that shows a grandfather and some adult children and some little kid and some dogs who are probably not directly DNA related to the family. But this is about passing things from generation to the next. And this will be very important to understand and connect with an ancestral line that you will know a lot about and understand who they were and where they came from. They're shown with many castles on sort of tapestries that hang. They came from diverse places. They're also shown with some gold coins and with a balance beam scale for measuring out gold. So there may be, like I said, inherited wealth, but it may not be literal wealth, but it certainly would be talents, skills, and things like that that you've inherited. I look at this as pretty positive. So I'm going to turn this over to Stuart, and he's going to do a reading.
Thank you.
All right. That's a nice, I like the way that these things coincide and balance each other out as well. And I think balance is a big part of this. I'm reading from my own Oracle deck and also tarot. And the first card I got for you is the Cloud. And the Cloud in this sense, I think, is talking about where you are and the fact that you are trying to find something that and decide on something, and it's not clear. And generally speaking, if we think about clouds, they pass. So you're on a transition space from this cloud going away and getting the information you want. The direct answer, I think, is that you are going to end up making this connection. The second card I have is the Child. So what are we doing? We're trying to honor the child, and you are the child in this sense. And I think this is going to give you a sense of completion on childhood in a way. I think that's what we're trying to connect with and become full in a sense. And then the third card is a mortar and pestle. And generally this card is about magic that needs to be done. So there's some work to do in this instance. There's something that you can do to bring this about. And so whatever practices you're doing, focus the magic on finding this light for yourselves. Then the tarot card that I get is the Justice card. So the way I'm seeing this is that you're bringing balance to yourself emotionally and spiritually in making this connection. I don't see anything aside from the cloud, but I don't think that that's saying don't do this or that this is not going to be received. I do feel like that this is going to be received and that the balance that's gained is on both sides, that this person also needs that sense of connection and completion to get clear with themselves. This will be good for them as well.
Oh, thank you both. This resonates so much.
Yeah. Stuart, I have a question. I got your first card, the cloud, but I missed your second card. What was
that? Child.
The child.
The child.
Oh, how wonderful. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's her role, really. Okay. Alrighty, so what we're seeing here is that you should go ahead. This will be well received. There will be work to do, but in the end, it's going to be worth it. And as far as your non-biological father, your dad, I don't see a problem in these cards that I drew. I see it as, very inclusive. That last card, the Ten of Pentacles, is very inclusive. Let's turn this over to Conjurman and see what he has to say in terms of spell work.
Thank
you. I think you've gotten some very important and insightful readings here. So I'm going to give you a working that you're going to do regularly in order to cultivate healing, in order to help bring this situation to the end result that you hope for, to help the reconnection go smoothly. First, because this is a long-term working, I like to do oil lamp works for long-term workings because you can keep working them by adding more oil and trimming the wick. So get yourself an oil lamp, and to this lamp, add angelica root, flaxseed, basil, cloves, and rosemary. Pray over this, add in blessing oil. You're going to add your fuel oil. You're going to light this on a Monday while the moon is waxing, and you're going to keep this oil lamp going. Trim the wick, add oil as needed, and keep praying. So light, as long as this light is on, it will bring healing. It will bring goodness. It's particularly good for sort of when there's distance between people. It can help gap that distance. I like to do this type of working near a window, almost like beckoning the person to the home, so to speak. So this, you're going to have this oil lamp going. At the same time, you're going to create a sugar jar. You're going to take a photo of your biological father, if you have one, or you can find it online. If not, then you're going to use the names. But if you can find the photo, then I want you to edit it with yourself. You're going to write on the back of this picture a petition. And then you're going to add 2 balms of Gilead, a pinch of angelica root, and a bit of marjoram. And you're going to fold this up nice and tightly so that nothing comes out of it. You're going to put this into a mason jar and then cover it with sugar, or any type of sugar jar will work. You're going to cover it with sugar, and you're going to place it at the same place as the oil lamp, and you're going to close it. Then I want you to get yourself some Peaceful Home incense and mix motherwort into it, which is particularly good for a peaceful home and for connecting families. You can also add a little bit of bloodroot to this as well. Every Monday, what you're going to do is tend to your oil lamp. You're going to trim the wick. You're going to make sure the oil is full. You're going to light your incense. It's Peaceful Home. You're going to make it into a small cone, and you're going to mix in with that motherwort and bloodroot, and you're going to light that incense. And while the incense is going, and while you've got the oil lamp, you're going to grab the sugar jar, and you're going to shake it up and pray from your heart for sweetness, for healing, to reconnect to find a peaceful connection, to find healing for both yourself and this other person, for this bio, for your biological parent here. And you're going to keep this going so long as you have this altar with this oil lamp, this incense, and this sugar jar. Every Monday you're going to do this, and it will help with this matter. Now, once you've reconnected with this person, I would suggest that you take a picture with them and then include that picture on this altar. You can put a picture of the father who raised you as well on the altar to ensure that the whole family receives blessings and healing. You're going to build this altar up. And if there's things that remind you, though, let's say you go and this person gives you a gift, you're going to put that gift onto your altar. Or maybe you two talk and you find a pebble together that reminds you of your time together. You're going to bring that rock or pebble back and place it on the altar. In other words, you're going to give this altar love and attention and focus. And as you do this, as it continues to grow, it will cultivate a relationship. So you cultivate the spiritual side of it and will manifest in the emotional side of things. You're going to keep this going, and you're going to keep refilling the oil lamp. You're going to continue to shake the jar. You're going to continue to add new incense. When the incense is burned down, you're going to take the ashes of it and just sprinkle it in your front yard. Just sprinkle the ashes so that it continues to stay close. And you're going to keep working this altar. It's a sort of three-part working here that combines the sort of jar power that we find sort of earthen magic, the air magic of incense, with the fire magic of an oil lamp. If there is an instance where this person is going to come and meet in your house, then I want you to sprinkle peace water around the house, and that'll add in an element of water and keep things good. This working I've done in the past for clients who are trying to reconnect with family or reconnect with estranged family or with biological families, and it does work, but it's a gradual working. So you want to start this before you make any sort of contact, a little bit in advance, several weeks in advance, and sort of let it gradually build. It's not one of those things that gives sort of an immediate result. You want to sort of soften. And the more you work it, the more days you work it before you sort of meet up, the better this working will be. Let's see if my colleagues have anything further to add.
That's. I think you've hit on every point that's important. And I especially like the idea of sprinkling the peace water around the house. That's really good. And putting physical things on the altar and tending to it. When we speak of an altar, the only thing I would have to add is that an altar need not be something set up like in public view. It can be just a little something that you keep in a corner somewhere in a out of sight. Some people will use what are called temporary altars, where you put things away in a box and then take them out and work with them once a week. I think the reason that Conjurman picked Monday was because it's the moon, and the moon has to do with motherhood. And the one thing these two men have in common is your mother. And so This is to bring her spirit in also to show how this is all connected and how they will be connected through you.
Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you.
Yeah. Good luck to you. It's absolutely important work to do. Let's have our station identification. It's brief but powerful.
LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays, 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays, 4 to 5:30. The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays. The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LeFay, in syndication, Tuesdays. The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield in syndication, Wednesdays, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, Thursdays, 4 to 5. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Some quick announcements about those upcoming shows on the LMC Radio Network. Monday, March 11th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Mystics and Mages in Magical Places will be another great show. And Tuesday, March 12th on the Crystal Silence League in syndication will be with a special guest, Jim Callahan, the director of the International Seance Project. And Tuesday, March 12th on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron in syndication with Miss Elvira and Phoenix LaFay will be the topic of the god Jiva. And Wednesday, March 13th on the Now You Know Show in syndication with Professor Porterfield will be the topic of The Blood of Jesus and Dixie John Root. And Thursday, March 14th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Miss Elvira and Deb Voith will be the topic Balancing and Reclaiming Our Inner Sovereignty. Now I'm going to hand this over to Miss Kat for our contest winners.
All right. Well, before we get to our contest winners, I just wanted to say that I saw Papa G in the chat, and I want to thank you, Papa G, for sending me the gift of ginger. And all of you who listen to this show know that Papa G is my dealer, my supplier. Since I've known him, I've never had to buy my own ginger because he sends it to me regularly. And so thank you, Papa G. And this one came with a note saying, since I had not announced a book yet, he thought I probably was down there in the font mind. But I have announced a book. The problem is the title. So the book will be coming out this summer. I don't know. At one point I called it the blue folder. Another time I called it the green folder. I'm now going to call it the golden folder. But whatever it is, it's a book of all of the material that was given away in the last 4 or 5 years of the Hoodoo Heritage Festival, plus some old flyers of instructions that I've written over the years back in the 90s that I have never published and in this particular format. So, yeah, Papa G called it the plaid folder. I think it was Jeremy who gave it that name. I'm not a plaid person, but I'm thinking now I like the golden folder because it has that resonant vowel and consonant sound. So we'll see. It's going to have some name. I was going to call it the green folder, but then everyone said, oh, but Hoodoo Urban Root Magic is called the green book and therefore the golden folder. Hey, Maganda says, the Paisley folder. Sure, we could call it the Vera Bradley fabric folder. Whatever. I don't know if any of you remember Vera Bradley. Okay, now we have our Facebook winners. We have 6 winners. Our Facebook Fridays winners for March 8th, 2024 are Violet LaRue, Lexi Bush, Lisa Moreno, Hannah Lopez, Josh McCasland, and Monica Rainey. And they've each won a bottle of genuine, handmade, Lucky Mojo brand hot foot oil to get rid of their nasty neighbors and their enemies and everybody who they don't want to have around them anymore. So if you're one of the 6 winners this week, congratulations. Respond to the message from the Lucky Mojo Facebook page, please, and send us your mailing address for shipping purposes. Do not respond to anybody who asks you for your credit card. That would be a spammer, scammer. We don't ask for your credit card. We just need your shipping address so we can send you your free hot foot oil. Look for another contest next week. It will be a book contest. All right. Now it's time for the free spell.
All right.
And now it's...
I jumped on the instructions. Sorry. All right. So the spell I'm giving today is based on a very popular use of magic that you find here in Hong Kong, especially at this time of year in March. And that is to... it's called actually villain running away a villain or getting rid of a demon. And And you'll find this underneath overpasses in Hong Kong. And the women that usually are doing this magic are even have like a license to be the vendor of this magic from the government, which is quite fascinating. The spell is it's a ritual and spell. And the first thing you will do is you'll make an offering, and this you do by lighting three sticks of incense or lighting incense to the energy or god that you are going to use to help you and aid you in this magic. And once you light the incense, you then also light one or three red candles. You take a piece of paper and you draw an image of a man or a woman, depending on who it is you want to drive away. And if you're driving away some sort of demonic energy, you have a representation of that. You write down the name and the birth date, if you have it, of this person that you're trying to dispel, and you give a name to the demon or thing that you're trying to drive away. And then you take this paper and you put it on top of a brick or something strong, and you beat it with a shoe. And as you beat it with a shoe, you call out with emotion, "I beat the villain that ruins things. I beat the villain of my childhood. I beat the villains of my family. I beat the villains in my house, at work, in the east, in the west, in the north." Every possible way you can think of beating the villains out of your house and out of your life, you call on those things until you have destroyed that paper. Then, on a yellow piece of paper, you have the image of a tiger, and you cut this image out. You put this tiger paper with the beaten villain paper, and you put some either pig's blood or pig fat in the mouth of the tiger, because you want him to eat the villains and not spread his not eat other things that you want. So you're satiating the tiger after he's been fed the villain, and then you burn these papers together. After you've done this, on another paper, usually yellow paper, you write down all the blessings and positive things you wish to bring and receive to yourself. You can then treat this with an oil, although traditionally that wouldn't be done. I think that would be useful in this case. You fold this paper horizontally so that it's a long, thin piece of paper. You light the end of that paper on fire, and you take that and circle your head with it as you recite the things you want to draw into yourself. You then allow that paper to burn down completely. And at the end, you have an option of asking if this has been received and if this spell is going to be affected by throwing what is called moon blocks. It can also be done with shells. And if you look up moon blocks, you'll find everything you need to know about those. And that is my spell for today.
That's wonderful. And I have to say that Reverend James did an entire workshop on moonblocks and supplied moonblocks to the people who attended the workshop. That workshop is still available without the moonblocks, but he has some and probably can sell them to you. And that workshop will be in the Golden Folder, and the workshop is available as a video on how to use moonblocks. So what
Fantastic.
An interesting overlap. All right, I'm going to turn this over to the aforesaid Reverend James to take us on out of here.
I do have those for sale, so just ask. Thank you, Ms. Kat and Conjure Man, and thank you, Stuart Palm of StuartPalm.com in Hong Kong, for being our guest this week. We invite you to join us next week when we will have Ms. Michael of HoodooFoundry.com in Willits, California, on the topic of protection and guardianship. Once again, we've come to the end of another Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California. You can find Miss Cat via the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and ConjureMan at ConjureManConsulting.com in Mission Viejo, California. I'm your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from FolkConjure.com in North Carolina. The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And the shows are available in archive via luckymojo.com/radioshow.html. For all of us at Lucky Mojo, I'd like to thank you for being here and invite you to tune in once again next week at this same time when you will hear the familiar strains of the Memphis Jug Band playing Jug Band Waltz. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Ah, thank you, Reverend James. All right. Well, folks, that's so interesting how all of that overlaps, the cultures of different nations and continents and our interest in worldwide folklore. You know, Nagashiba is the head of the board of directors of the Ironwood Institution for the Preservation and Popularization of Indigenous Ethnomagicology. And our moon blocks are sitting there in the archives of that organization, which has the initials YIPI. And you can find YIPI online. You'll find it by going to ironwood.org once you learn how to spell the name Ironwood. And we have a lot of things there about worldwide folk magic. So I want to thank Stuart Palm, who may have already rushed off to go pick up his son, and for being our guest, but he told us he'd have to skedaddle when he was done with the free spell. So we are waving him goodbye with wafts of incense and hope he gets there on time. And I want to especially thank Papa G and also Tony I. Wickway is up. J.D., Hey Maganda, Phyllis Margaret Gabor, Reverend Art, and Brother Blue, and Aya Asha Aya for being in the chat. Good night.
Goodbye, all.